This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. Welcome back on this Monday morning. May the 4th be with you. Coming up in this episode, hear an interview with Dr. Gary Kirkulus. He personally drives around Phoenix, Arizona in a mobile medical van providing free pediatric, adolescent, and young adult care for the homeless youth population there. And our healthcare hero today is Jeff Wardell. He'll talk about delivering PPE to local nonprofit organizations in the Salinas Valley. Swiss drug company Roche has won emergency approval from the U.S. FDA for an antibody test to determine whether people have ever been infected with the coronavirus, according to Reuters Sunday. Governments are seeking out the blood test to learn who may have had the disease, who may have some immunity, and to help develop strategies to reopen. The company aims to more than double its monthly production of tests by the end of the year. City officials in Juneau, Alaska, have started a joke hotline amid the coronavirus pandemic to keep their community laughing. The hotline was so popular, it broke within a day of debuting, but has since been fixed. The Anchorage Daily News reports there are 3 volunteers, 1 retired man, and 2 high school girls, who record a new joke each morning, 7 days a week. But they're also looking for submissions, so you can email your joke idea to parks.rec@juneau.org. Only family-friendly jokes, of course. And if you want to give the hotline a call, that number is 907-586-0428. A couple of neighbors in California hadn't gotten the chance to meet until coronavirus lockdown. Turns out they're more than just neighbors. They're actually related. Radio MD's Bill Klaproth.
Yettle and Zoe Noten live 4 houses away from Eric and Jen Strom in the Los Angeles area. Other than the occasional neighborly wave or hi passing on the street, they've never spoken. So during an impromptu neighborhood get-together, of course, at a safe distance, they shared their Norwegian heritage as they spoke for the first time. After a couple of text exchanges with relatives back in Norway, each family found out that Yettle and Eric have the same great-grandfather. It's a crazy coincidence, Noten said, and one that probably wouldn't have happened without the pandemic. Both families are looking forward to spending more time together once the safer at home restrictions are lifted. You can go ahead and put this one in the good things to come out of the pandemic file. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Dr. Gary Kirkulus has an unusual practice. He personally drives around Phoenix, Arizona in a 40-foot mobile medical van, providing free pediatric, adolescent, and young adult care for the homeless youth population in that city. We got a hold of him to tell us more about helping youth in his area. So, Dr. Kirkulus, tell us about the homeless youth outreach program at Phoenix Children's Hospital.
So it's a really great program, a collaboration between our hospital, Phoenix Children's Hospital, and the Children's Health Fund. And essentially what it does is it bridges the gap for disadvantaged communities who are unable to access their healthcare. And so the simple solution would be to simply bring care to them. And so the way we accomplish that is through mobile medicine. And so we have a fleet of 3 mobile medical units. They're about 35 to 40 feet long. They are complete with 2 exam rooms, a laboratory to do blood samples. We have a pharmacy, which is great for those who don't have insurance or who don't have transportation to pick up their medications from a pharmacy. And that can be done right on the mobile unit.
Why set up a mobile model? You know, why not make clients come to you like in a typical clinic or emergency room setting?
Well, you know, frequently, if your model, your program is to be able to reach the homeless or low income, no income populations, typically they will not have transportation. And if you want to be able to reach them, you have to bring the healthcare to them. Mm-hmm. Also, mobile medicine is also great because usually homeless populations and low income communities are not necessarily near any healthcare options. So that's another great way to reach them. And then also, you know, cities change and, you know, there's things like gentrification going on and different populations are moving in different parts of the city. So with mobile medicine, being as flexible as we are, we simply follow the communities that need us.
That's really cool. How long have you been doing this?
I started in 2015, so Nice. Past 5 years. Yeah.
And tell us about some of the biggest health issues you see among at-risk youth.
It's typically the same things that you would see in other communities, but it's usually more severe or presents more severe because there's been a lack of access to care. One of the examples we use is things like athlete's foot, you know, something very common. But in a homeless youth, you have their shoes on and their socks on, and those are the only shoes and socks that they own. They don't take them off at night because they fear someone might steal their shoes or their socks. So when they present to me, it's usually athlete's foot times three. Or another good example might be your asthmatic who's coming in with coughing fits. If they had had access to regular healthcare, they might be, you know, not too good, but okay. But, you know, in a child who is living on the streets, becoming a little bit worse.
And how have your services changed with, of course, COVID-19 happening?
It's kind of an unusual situation. Yeah. I think most models of healthcare were taken really aback by this. You know, we suddenly had to, within a couple of weeks, most clinics would have to suddenly think around how are we going to connect with our patients. That's something that that's kind of our niche. You know, we're always having to think out of the box, like how do we access these patients? It's something that kind of comes natural to us, just trying to reach our patients and overcoming hurdles. So I won't lie, you know, there was some growing pains, but we were able to accommodate pretty quickly, thanks to being associated with the Phoenix Children's Hospital, where we were privy to all the Zoom licensing that they had. So we were able to implement, quickly convert our patient visits to Zoom. And so that's what we're doing now. In our experience, you know, most practices are relying on Zoom to connect with their patients. And that's great. But when you're working with underserved communities, you have to kind of think a couple of steps ahead. Telehealth is great for the average family, but they need a smartphone, they need a data plan, they need a reliable internet connection. And those are all things that the average homeless family doesn't have, or the average low-income family might not have. So that does present a unique hurdle for the underserved community. And I would also say that disadvantaged populations are usually more vulnerable during pandemics because they're already reliant on the resources that are available to them. And I think some of the health data is really showing that, like, for example, in LA and New York and New Orleans, they're showing that people who live in those zip codes with high rates of poverty are having higher death rates. And in fact, we're actually seeing the same thing here in Arizona. In particular, the Navajo Nation was hit particularly hard. I think they had about 1,000 cases and close to 60 deaths. And when you think about the percent of the deaths here in Arizona, the Navajo population, as well as Native Americans in general, had about 18% of the deaths here in Arizona. However, they're only 4.5% of our population. So it really goes to show that disadvantaged populations really have more difficulty and are hit harder with pandemics than, you know, than the average population would.
Kind of looking at the whole scope of your practice, I guess, like, my question is kind of like, I'm sure these aren't the type of patients that would typically bring themselves to a doctor if it wasn't for you coming to them. Like, how does that interaction change with, you know, the mobile services and reaching a population that might not seek out medical care more readily?
Absolutely. So a lot of the patients that we have a lot of barriers to access care. So one of the biggest ones is being uninsured. So if you're an undocumented person, you are uninsurable. And then people that are sort of new to Phoenix or who've moved here for, you know, a variety of circumstances that don't have insurance. And so these populations are ones that suddenly have the access to healthcare, which is great. For example, if you might have a family that being in a group home or in a shelter, accessing healthcare was something that they would ever thought they'd be able to do unless it was something that was truly emergent. But now, you know, when we bring our mobile units to a group home, there suddenly we're able to, you know, get those kids vaccinated, assess their developmental milestones, see them for those coughs and colds and asthma, get them into specialty care. So it's a great opportunity for them. I guess I would say, and this is something that I would say that most of the time I never gave thought about, you know, if I diagnose an ear infection, I simply send the script to a pharmacy and assume that the patient has transportation to get it or has the means to get it. I guess my best advice for other practitioners is to think, you know, those next couple steps, is that family that's coming into you to see you, do they have transportation? To ask, hey, if I send the script, do you have transportation? Or, you know, is it a situation where you and your three children are going to have to get on a city bus for a 45-minute trip to get to the closest pharmacy? A lot of that isn't really taught in med school. and during your residency. So that's one of the biggest, and have residents that come on that train with us. I to them, you know, your takeaway lesson is, hey, what's those couple steps that I need to think about to help my patient the care that they need? So if it's transportation or if it's insurance, what is their health literacy? If I tell them I need to send you to a specialist, do they really understand why? You understand why, but do they understand why? And once they do, then they're more likely to follow through with your care.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. This is an angle that we haven't really touched on our podcast, so I'm really excited to put it out there.
Great. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm kind of sort of striving for. I felt like, you know, we have such a unique practice here. Yeah. And the news headlines are sort of, you know, fit with the average person is dealing with. And then, you know, from our lenses, it's like, yeah, that's bad and it's horrible. But just imagine what it's like to be a homeless family right now. Yeah, and that's, I'm just trying to be the sort of the voice and advocate for them.
And we're heading out west to California for our healthcare heroes today. That's where the Salinas Valley Memorial Hospital Foundation has delivered personal protective equipment to local nonprofit organizations to help protect frontline volunteers and the at-risk populations they serve. The overall goal of the foundation is to raise money to support Salinas Valley Memorial Healthcare System in their mission to provide quality healthcare to their patients and to improve the health and well-being of their community. I chatted with Jeff Wardell. He's the chief philanthropy officer at that foundation, about their project. Jeff, can you tell us about your project, giving out masks to groups in need in your area?
Sure. So we're a community-based healthcare nonprofit that supports one of the healthcare systems here in our region. And as this scenario has developed in our community, we were really trying to figure out where we could do the greatest good. There, we have so many great nonprofits here that are really on the front lines providing resources to some of our most at-risk communities. And really where we realized that we could make a difference was in leveraging our connection to a healthcare system and using philanthropic dollars to purchase personal protective equipment and be able to pass those items through to some of these nonprofits that are truly on the front lines serving these folks. That they're limited in the resources that they had to begin with, and then throw in, you know, the situation where the federal government and the state are starting to constrict and control the flow of some of these things. It was making it very hard for these folks to get these items. So our board and the community were so incredibly generous and allowed us the flexibility with our fundraising dollars to be able to provide that to them.
And tell us about some of the nonprofits you chose to deliver masks to. Why these?
Sure. So again, we're somewhat of a small community. We're, you know, about 3,000 or so square miles, our county, but our population's only about 400,000 people. So we've got a lot of great nonprofits that serve our homeless population and some of the underserved pockets of our senior population and some of the economically challenged. So we have organizations here like Dorothy's Place and Community Homeless Solutions that serve our warming shelters and take care of that portion of our population. So they have a lot of volunteers that are out in those communities and dealing with those folks. And so us being able to provide their service workers and their frontline folks with some protection and also being able to give them enough items that they could pass through to some of those pockets of at-risk folks has made it a little bit safer at the very least for them to be able to do what they need to do to keep those folks moving and keep them fed and give them the resources that they need. We've also been able to work with some larger organizations in our region like the Salvation Army and Meals on Wheels, which heavily rely on a volunteer workforce. And many of them are, you know, folks that are unfortunately kind of fit into that at-risk category. So being able to provide these resources along with what they're currently doing for social distancing and some of the protective measures they put in place, I think is really making a difference in their ability to do their job safely and make sure the community still gets the resources they need. We've also been able to work with some of the organizations that are providing transportation during this time. You know, we've got a large portion of our population that relies on public transit to get to vital appointments and services that are provided throughout the county. So we've been able to provide the local transit folks, as well as some of these nonprofits that provide one-to-one transportation for seniors and some physically challenged folks to be able to protect them and protect the folks they serve.
Talk to us about the importance of community, you know, especially in a small town, and just having, you know, why all these organizations have each other's backs.
Sure. Well, one thing I'll say is that living in Monterey County my entire life, was born and raised here. This is an incredibly engaged community that truly just breathes philanthropy as a culture. We have so many great organizations here, and a lot of them are incredibly supported by local business, the ag industry, which is heavily based out of the Salinas Valley. So we've got a lot of great supporters and a lot of people that have had generations worth of family members that have served in volunteer capacities with a lot of these great organizations. So we've been very lucky, you know, again, with some of the circumstances, geography being one of them, and proximity to resources, we do have a population that is somewhat challenged. So having these groups able to provide these services to them has really helped our community rise up to a lot of the challenges that we face.
You can find out more about the Salinas Valley Memorial Hospital Foundation at svmhfoundation.org. This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. If you know someone going the extra mile to help others during this pandemic, send them our way at COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. That's, of course, COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. Let's kick this week off right, and we'll be right here with you tomorrow. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.